Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Her Journey Told podcast. On this show, we will focus on strengthening women's mental fitness through sharing the joy, struggle, and wisdom of each woman's journey. Our show is powered by Pivotal Moments. Go to pivotalmoments.org to learn more. Hello, and welcome to the Her Journey Told podcast. I'm your host, Sandy Lutton, and this podcast is powered by Pivotal Moments Media. I'm joined today by Beth Shahey, and you guys, she's no stranger to our show because we've been working on this Atlas of the Heart series for quite some time, and Beth is a certified master life coach and an amazing life coach and someone I work directly with as well. So welcome, Beth.
Thanks. It's great to be here. This conversation has been so good, so stimulating. I learned so much from you, Sandy. I've learned so much from reading Brené's book, processing it, and it's been great. So let's keep it going.
I mean, this book has been so powerful. And for those of you who haven't read it yet, I highly recommend it. It's Atlas of the Heart by Brené Brown. Brené is the guru when it comes to vulnerability and finding strength in that vulnerability. And she really drives into all the different emotions that we feel. And the point of the book really is for us to each better understand our own emotions so that we can better connect with other people and understand their emotions even better and really unify in us. So it's been quite a journey that we've been on with this book, and I've really enjoyed it so far. But I'm curious, Beth, is there of what the material we've covered so far, and we're kind of on part five now, the last part, wrapping up the book. Is there anything that just really stood out to you amongst all the great gems of insight there?
Yeah, there is really so many things that make sense to me and that really hit home. But there was something in the last chapter that we covered, chapter 9, where we were really talking about belonging. Mm-hmm. And as I've been kind of really mulling that over and watching some things happening in my current life with kids that are around me, my own kids and other kids, I've really been putting that to the grindstone and really feeling what that feels like. You know, Brené talks about in this chapter, be here, be you, and belong. And I think, you know, she talks about her research with middle school kids, and I have a middle schooler, and I also coach a middle school field hockey team here in State College. And I am watching so many things happen so quickly. I'm watching kids just struggling with their identity in a way that they haven't ever before. I think there are more options and more definitions for kids to show up in the world. And I think that at the end of the day, they're just trying to belong. Right. And they're just trying to find the place that makes them feel like they matter or that they're seen or they're heard. Even if they don't completely resonate with something, they may go in that direction because it does. And so I'm watching this and I'm watching how things are evolving and the things that our kids are dealing with, the perspective that is out there. And so I've just been kind of, like I said, mulling it over, thinking about it. And in addition to that, in middle school, my daughter was just recently asked to be a part of a group in our high school. And the same sort of feeling, it's identifying what issues are going on that are creating boundaries and walls and divide in our student body. We have a very large school here, so it's very easy to get lost. And so, you know, the cream rises to the top, and the cream being what? Who knows? Who cares? It doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, with people still wearing masks up until Monday, very little connection, people feeling lost and like they're not belonging and trying to still find their way, even in high school, they're realizing that this it cannot go on like this. So they got together this group of influential people to say, what's going on? How can we address it? And what can you do on a daily basis? Mm-hmm. So we're talking like, you know, a top level athlete that is the kindest kid in all of State College, I would say, being challenged to say, listen, everyone's afraid of you. Why are they afraid of you? they're afraid of you because you have power. What is power? You know, Brené talks a little bit, you know, in a couple more chapters about power being actually something we can use. Let's use that power. You are a kind kid with a good heart. Are you willing to use that power?
Right.
Can you be seen doing this so that people will say, ah, that's cool because he's doing it. Now I'm going to do this. And so these are the real conversations that they had just yesterday about showing up and showing other people that it's not about that. I mean, it's kind of High School Musical-esque or Glee, you know, where we just kind of try and encourage the people that have a sway to do the right thing. And it's not because we're coercing them to do the right thing. These are good kids, but somehow they've been labeled as mean or scary, and they're not. It's just because of what we've been given to them. And I think that what's happening in our schools is happening all over the world. Mm-hmm. And so I think it starts with be here, be you, belong. And then as parents, I think we need to create space. We need, like when my kids come home, sometimes they just need to like let go, you know, just
decompress.
Decompress. Yeah. And so there's a space around that where I think as parents, it's important that we listen, that we back up enough to not put our own views, because we have no idea what happens in a day there at school. And I think it's important that we encourage conversation. So encourage conversation so that they can sort it out, right? They're all trying to figure it out. I don't think anything's malicious or manipulative or yuck. I think it's they're trying to figure it out. So when we give them a safe space to have that conversation at home, they can feel more confident and comfortable every morning when they walk into that school. And then they can help be a part of the change, be a part of the evolution in a positive way. I think the more we interject, the more we control, the more we worry and try to keep things, the more we're going to continue to create those walls. And our kids don't need that from us at home. They need open space to explore and safe space. And then they can go on out and be the change, because change is coming and we've got to embrace it and we've got to encourage it. And we've got to hold them in our arms and say, go babies fly, because there's some good stuff coming. But also recognize that what they're going through is not easy. We've never experienced a generation that's had this much access to this much information, this quickly. And so they're not capable of processing it all. So we need to create that space with them and help them and support them and encourage them. So that's on my heart. Thanks for asking.
It's a lot, but you know what? It's so, so true. And I mean, I can just even put myself in those shoes, because I also have a middle schooler and I have two elementary school kids. And, you know, I can completely relate to being at work all day and coming home and just needing a moment to decompress, like just process my day, just regroup. Right. And I see that in my kids as well. And sometimes it kind of drives me crazy, because it's usually when I'm saying, trying to rally everyone, it's time to go to bed. It's, you know, got to get up early, got school tomorrow. That's when they want to talk. So there's that part of me that's like in that process mode. Like, we got to go, you know, like you got to get brush your teeth. You got to get, you know, get ready for bed. But that's when they want to talk. And so I've learned to because it's been a process for me even, you know, to really take a step back and give them that space to talk. Like, you really have to embrace that time, because you're right. It is coming. You know, they are so distracted by so many different things. And, you know, it's all in how we respond to what they're saying, whether or not they're going to keep coming back for more. I know I've shared some, you know, maybe disappointing news to my own mother at one point in time, and, you know, had her go, oh, you have to fix this. And I would, I had come to her like just wanting someone to kind of nurture me and say, it's okay, it's going to be fine, you'll figure this out, you know. Yeah. But that wasn't the response that I got. And, you know, I think a lot of it was her own fear being projected, but it is, and it takes us right into chapter 10, in spaces we go when our heart is open. And I think that's where we need to be in those instances when that person's ready to talk and wants to share, and, you know, being vulnerable in that moment, it's our opportunity to just open our hearts and just really listen. And, you know, there's a great quote in this chapter that I love, that Brené says, we need more real love, gritty, dangerous, wild-eyed, justice-seeking love. And when I read that quote, I thought, oh my gosh, that couldn't be a truer statement for right now and where we are in the world. It really has to be a place where we're all willing to go and really opening our eyes and our hearts to what people are dealing with. And it's because of what's happening in the world right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you said is so important is, are we projecting our fears on other people? And I think, I've noticed that when I'm coaching clients, oftentimes the things that get us riled up or the things that, get us worried or nervous are indicators. Those are indicators of things that we need to dig deeper into. So rather than projecting that onto our kids or projecting that out into the community or into the world, get clear on it yourself. So if you feel really anxious about something, whatever the topic might be, dig in a little deeper. What is it about you that's feeling that way? Just as this book talks about, when we get clear on our inner compass and our inner landscape, we then can express it better. But those are all indicators, you know?
Yeah, I think...
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, I think, this particular chapter, it sounds easy, right? Just open your heart and love, right? It sounds so easy, but it's just to your point, there's so much going on inside of us that's not an easy thing either. And, they talk about heartbreak and it's what happened when love is lost. And let's be honest, we all experience that at some point in our lives, which makes it that much harder to open our hearts and love again, yes. And yeah. I think, it is this cycle, and it is so important for us to take that space and be able to step back and go, why am I feeling this way right now? And why am I in this place? So,
yeah. And I think, she goes on to talk about trust and using the acronym BRAVING. Yes. And I love that. And I love when she talks about it in general, but I also really love when she talks about it versus when she compares it to self-trust and how that is the worst sense of betrayal is when we have betrayed ourselves.
Yes.
And I love that. Martha Beck talks a lot about integrity and doing an integrity cleanse and living your life like for a day or for a week and simply not lying and checking the points where you're lying and why. And I'm talking little things like, I can't go because I have to take my kid to the doctor. Well, you don't even have to take your kid to the doctor. So why don't you just say what's true, but get behind those little teeny lies of why is it that you're afraid to just show up as you are? And right. so when she does them and she asks the questions like B, did I respect my own boundaries? Was I clear about what's okay and what's not okay? R, was I reliable? Did I do, and she goes on A, V, I, and G. It's all about checking in with yourself. And so just like we just talked about, when something comes up and you're afraid or nervous, ask yourself these questions. Or when you've, been a part of some conversation or you're in a community and you're feeling like something's off, I'm not showing up as my real self or my authentic self, I think this list of questions is a great check. I think it's a great way to just say, where am I falling short here? Which then goes into the Naomi Osaka and Simone Biles and how we were all on our, on the edge of our seat watching them say, I'm sorry, world, I'm gonna have to disappoint you. And deal with it. That's your business, because my business is taking care of me. And the way that they decided to not betray their own mind, body, and spirit is exactly what we all need to be doing in the world, is showing up in that way. And we need to not criticize people that do. We need to encourage that and say, get it. Awesome. Great, great leadership way to show up,
Right.
I love that. I love that story.
Yeah, I have, you mentioned the word betrayal and that just triggered a thought. I have a thought, I experienced something in my life. I actually got fired from a job that I thought I had put all my heart and soul into and so much effort into being successful in this position. I felt like I had received, great feedback. My performance was, lots of great recognition on my performance. And then one day, after 5 years, I was brought in to the CEO's office and she said, I'm sorry, but today's going to be your last day. Unfortunately, I don't think you're the right cultural fit for our company. And I mean, it just crushed, right? Never been fired from a job before. Like I said, I felt like I had sacrificed so much for this position and to try to be successful. And I really struggled to deal with it. And it took me to a place where months and months and months afterwards, I couldn't figure out why am I still, and let's be honest, I knew the reason that I wasn't the right cultural fit was not the real reason, right? And I felt like I wasn't being told the truth. And and I was like, why do I feel this way? And someone asked me one time, how did that make you feel, right? Like going through that, I was telling the story and they were, wow, how did that make you feel? And I said, it was in that moment that I realized, I said, I felt betrayed. I felt in that moment that I had been betrayed. I had given my all and I had trusted that I was doing the right thing and that the leadership was guiding me down the right path, only to find that there was a different agenda, right? And I never really got that answer. And, you know, I've had numerous people tell me over time, like, does it matter? Does it matter what the answer is ultimately? You know, I mean, and you know, when you go through something major, major transition like this in your life, you usually end up on the better end of it, right? And I wouldn't change it for the world. I wouldn't go back to that or anything. But I just remember feeling betrayed. And we always think of someone as betraying us, but I think, and I could look at it that way. I don't know that I really look at it that way. It's more as I look at the company or the entity I felt betrayed by, or even the concept behind working so hard to the point of, you know, practically burnout. And then I turned it around. I was like, I was as upset with myself as I was with, you know, the situation. And I thought, why did I let myself do this? And then I almost felt like I betrayed myself. I wasn't true to myself. And you talked about the integrity piece. Yeah. And that to me was such an eye-opener moment of, all right, if I had been true to myself through that entire process, knowing that it wasn't, I mean, you know, you look back on it, it wasn't working out for me. It was not in my best interest. I wasn't living my best life in this job. You know, I was in some ways a slave to it, but I created that. No one else did. So really looking back to me and saying, okay, how can I avoid doing this going forward? But doing that work with myself helped me to really just embrace that situation and forgive and not feel that betrayal anymore. And so that to me was a very important step, but it took me a long time to get there. I'm making it sound easy. It wasn't.
No, not at all. And I think there's a correlation between the deeper the relationship, if it's a person, or the time spent, like you had 5 years in that job of feeling like you were doing the right thing, that it, the deeper the betrayal, because you feel like, wow, I definitely was led astray here. And so I do think that there's, and so that makes sense. But then the unwinding for you to say, what's my piece in this? What's their piece? You know, and knowing that, you know, you learn from those things.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I do think it's important to be able to, you know, not dwell on the past, but reflect and take that time to think, how might have I done things differently? And I tend to be the person to dwell a little bit. So I have to check myself on that. But I think that's important. You know, I went through a lot of emotions, right? And we talk about in this chapter, the other one is hurt. I was hurt by the situation. Mm-hmm. And Brené says something in the book that I thought was so powerful. And it was, she said, one of the bravest things you could say to someone is, that hurt my feelings. Mm-hmm. And it's simple, it's concise, it's clear. It's very clear in that moment. And I thought, oh my gosh, that is so true. Because oftentimes pride keeps us from saying things like that. Like, you hurt my feelings. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we mm-hmm. want to pretend like we're tougher than that. But I found this chapter in itself to be, it evokes so much thought and emotion in me as I was reading it. And just looking back on some of the areas of my life where I've experienced some of these things, I found it to be very interesting. And she also says, she never once regretted calling a timeout, you know, mm-hmm. but she's like, she's oftentimes regretted not calling a timeout. Yeah. And I think that's also a really important lesson to learn is sometimes it's okay to say, I need a moment. Mm-hmm. And I've I'm not the best at that. I usually, if I feel something's wrong or things aren't right, I'm so quick to want to fix in that moment.
She talks about how that disarms her emotion, like for specifically with defensiveness or anger. When you take that moment, it's not even necessarily just for the other person. It's for you to just take a break, take a step back and really digest what's going on.
Absolutely. And my son, Luke, he probably wouldn't appreciate me saying this about him, but he's that person that he's a lot like me, and he just wants to address that problem and fix it. And I'm trying to teach him to, you know what, it might be time to just take a breath, think about things for a little bit, give yourself some space, and then come back and address this. And that is just not in his nature. And he kind of storms away mad, you know, like, okay. But then inevitably he always comes back in a much better space, ready to talk. You can reason with him at that point. So I it's funny to see it develop even in your children.
Yeah. And I would say kind of a very close feeling that she talks about here is this flooding, the concept of flooding.
Yes.
And I want to bring that up because I work a lot with internal family systems with my own life and with clients. And I kind of, if you're familiar with internal family systems, it's just that we're all made up of parts. All the parts play a role. Parts are a space and time in our life that maybe we experienced a trauma, or we have a protector that came to try and keep us safe. And so it all works as this kind of internal family. And sometimes we have these parts that are called firefighters. And firefighters are the ones that when something seems like it's going out of control, or when we feel like we're not clear, or we get really worried about something, a firefighter will come in and flood everything about you. It might make you really angry. Like it just floods because you just, it might make you, you know, spew all over people. It might make you want to, you're confused or you can't see straight, or you're really, really sad or tired. These are all firefighter parts where they just kind of come in and try to shut the whole system down. And that's what flooding is. It's like it blends with you so much. That's what in IFS language, blending is like flooding. And so you blend with something so deeply that your emotion is right here. Mm. And when Brené talks, you know, in the next couple chapters about anger can do that. It can create such a space that you cannot see straight. So even more important to take that moment to disarm. And you, whether it's in conversation to say, I'm sorry, I'm overwhelmed, I need a minute. Or if it's having a conversation with yourself, talk to that anger, talk to whatever emotion is flooding you. Sadness, I see you and I appreciate you're here and I know you want to shut me down, but are you willing to just move aside a little bit so I can see what's really happening underneath? Let me see what's happening. You don't have to go far away because our parts sometimes want to protect us. They can stay on our shoulder. But I use this all the time on my own life and with clients because it's effective. Oftentimes that flooding is just, it's debilitating. And so, I think that, you know, it's something that we just need to be aware of because then we can get to the real matter that's happening.
Yeah. I've read two books recently. One is, it's actually Will Smith's most recent book, Will. Oh, yeah? And he talks about, he doesn't say internal family structure, but I recognize it because you had taught me about it, but he's done a lot of that work. And he talks about like the different parts, his different parts. And I found, first of all, I found his book to be very profound from the perspective of he's done a lot of work to learn who he really is inside, right?
Nice.
Who is Will, which is why I think this book is so perfectly titled, because it really is just about who he is inside. And he talks about his life and you know, how as he's evolved and, you know, getting to know himself better, like that, how it's impacted the decisions he's made. And I found it to be a fascinating book and a book where you don't often see celebrities get that vulnerable and really break down who they are. And he did. And I thought that was so powerful. And the other one is Gabby Bernstein. And she talks about, you know, just some trauma that she had been through. And she also is doing, you know, using IFS is what we call it, internal family structure. Yeah. She uses that as well. And she, again, I was so struck by her vulnerability to really open up about what had happened in her life. And I do think that there's something there in that, in really getting to figure out who your parts are. And I know I'm in that process now. I'm going through that and a lot of great work you and I've been doing there, but it is so freeing in some ways to figure all of that out and then just kind of understand what makes you tick. And it, you are willing at that point to kind of give yourself some space to, mm-hmm. you know, like, hold on, let me, before I freak out, before I freak out here, let me really think about what's going on, and you can kind of manage it a lot better.
Yeah, right. And, absolutely. And, you know, it's like the, we've talked about the movie Inside Out, right? You know, you have to recognize that they're all parts and they're all needed. They're all welcome and they're all there for a reason.
Right.
And so, you know, in the next chapter, chapter 11, we talk about joy and happiness and calm and contentment mm-hmm. and things. Those are all needed too. And, but we can't have always those. We need to be able to understand that there are different pieces that make us work, and all of them working together creates harmony, and it creates health, and it creates an energy spiral upwards. And that's what we're really going for, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, one, there's a question she has in here that I was like, I've got to really incorporate this into my life. But she says, ask yourself, right? Do I have enough information to freak out?
I love it.
And oftentimes, most times the answer is no. I don't have enough information yet to freak out. So, and the other question was, will freaking out help the situation? And most of the time, no, freaking out does not. I mean, I can't imagine, I can't think of any situation where I freaked out and it actually helped the situation. So,
yeah.
So I thought that those two questions, I wrote them down. I've got them on sticky notes over here on my desk. Like, seriously, like, I need to start thinking about that of, do I have enough information to freak out here? Because usually I freaked out before I could even think, have to ask myself that question.
Yeah.
But I know with my kids, that is absolute best way to get them to shut down is to freak out over something. Yeah. And so therefore I am, again, learning in that process, learning to, you know, like, be more calm, ask yourself the question. You know, and it works. It absolutely works. And
it takes practice, right? So even if you're in the moment and you feel yourself freaking out, just say, don't freak out inside, right? Just stand there. Even if you look like a crazy person with your kids or whatever the situation is, do the work inside, do it internally, even in that moment, mm-hmm. even that awareness is so key. In fact, that awareness is perfect, because then eventually you'll start to become a little bit more of that calm presence anyway, because you've practiced it. But don't be afraid to practice it in that situation, even if you don't have the answers, or even if your emotions are raging, just say on the outside, show this, because it starts to create a space where that calm allows for intentionality. It allows for slowing down.
Yes.
It allows for disarming. It allows for sinking into the moment and really taking it in for what it's worth and not just freaking out.
I love that word, intentionality. That's another one that I've really been trying to focus on, is what is my intention? And I think I told you this the other day. I'm getting up now. I'm waking up now in the mornings asking myself, what is my intention for the day versus what is my to-do list for the day?
Yeah, that's so good.
And that has helped me a lot. I mean, I my to-do list completely stresses me out. And you and I've talked about this. It's like a figment of your imagination, because I've created it. And now I'm measuring myself based on how much I can check off of this list in a day. Like, what? It's so silly. But, you know, if you really think about, wow, I just want to really be able to, you know, connect with some people today, have great conversations, move some things forward, right? Then it's a whole different feel about your day. And for me, a lot less stressful. I know, like, you know, growing up, I was taught you've always got to be productive, you got to be doing. And if you're not, then you're lazy or you're this. It has stuck with me in a way that it, like, if I see somebody who's really busy and productive, it almost triggers me in a negative way. Like, it triggers me, like, I need to be more like that and I should be like this. But it's, and again, you've asked me, I love that question. Is it true? It's not true. I don't need to be more like that. But if I'm clear on what my intention is for the day, then I'm much less likely to be triggered by something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are feeling state to-dos. It's, how do I want to feel at the end of the day? How do I want to approach my day? Where am I needed? And it's with open hands saying, come on, guide me, tell me. You know, and I'll say, God, what do you have for me today? You know, and sometimes his answer is very different than my to-do list.
Yes.
Like, but you have to listen, right? You have to pause to listen.
That's right.
All right. Another thing in chapter 11, because I know we got to keep moving, is this. I thought this one was fascinating. The question where she says, the age old question, if we're not satisfied, she's talking about contentment. And she says, if we're not satisfied with our life as a whole, does that mean we need to go get and do the stuff that will make us satisfied so we can be content? Or does it mean we stop taking for granted what we have so we can experience real contentment and enoughness right now?
Yes.
And I don't expect us to answer that question, but I think that is a question that you could take all day long to talk about, because, you know, even as a coach, I'm talking with clients all the time about that. And I'm grappling that with my own life. You want more and you want to go out and pursue more of what you love. And I think that we want to do more of that, but I do think it's a balance. And so I think, I just bring that up, Sandy. I don't know if you have any thoughts on it, but I do feel like it's not an either or. I think it's a yes and.
Well, I completely agree with you. So one of the things I love to do, is travel. So during the pandemic, you couldn't travel, right? So that was one thing you couldn't do. So I've kind of been on this mission to like not intentionally make up for lost time, but I feel like maybe that is what I'm trying to do a little bit. And so I've been trying to travel more and more, but I think you're right. I found myself getting to a place of, wait a minute, like, yes, I'm traveling and I love to travel and this is amazing, but I also just need a moment to be at home and in my space and just kind of doing my thing. And you're right. 100% agree. It is a balance. I agree. It doesn't have to be an either or. It really should be I want to do this. I'm going to do this. And I'm going to find time to spend for me, for my situation, to spend at home and not feel like I have to be somewhere else constantly. And I'm just checking that feeling. Like, what's driving that feeling? Like, why do I have to be somewhere else? Because I'm not truly embracing like how great it is just to, there's nothing better than a rainy Sunday and you have nothing to do and you can just like lay on your couch, right?
You know, I think because our society and our culture tells us we need to do more and go attack and try and get more and, you know, and achieve more and be successful, we're in that habit. So sometimes for me, hanging out and doing nothing feels, what am I doing with my time? I'm wasting my time. Let's go. What could I be doing today? But I've noticed, and I think, you know, the pandemic taught me that I'm getting actually the feeling state I desire the more that I embrace that downtime, because all of a sudden I'm realizing that enoughness. I'm feeling like, interesting. I can have really productive days and I can have not productive days and I can feel the same. Yes. And I feel okay with that. Just giving myself the space, because then it opens me up to possibilities. It lets me be spontaneous, or it lets me just rest, which is another huge piece. So I'm recognizing the more that I do that, the more I'm getting what I need anyway. And that's a beautiful thing. So
yeah, it really is. And I think you're right. I think it's something that with the society's kind of, it's one of those societal norms, right? Like there are things that we've been taught or structures, and it's, you know, like, oh, it's got to look like this. And like, no, it doesn't. And as a matter of fact, it's interesting. Even now I work from home. I don't go into an office, and I find myself, you know, like at lunchtime, I sit down, I put my feet up, I'm eating my lunch, and I'm probably watching TV, because it is just such a great time for me to just like take it down a notch. Mm-hmm. As opposed to staying at my desk, eating at my desk, constantly on email, trying to get those knocked out. You know, I can do that now. And I love that I can do that now. And I was like, I never want that to change. Like, it's just one of those things where I'm like, it's okay if I take this hour or two even, because I can also, sometimes on the weekends, I like to sit in front of my desk and actually work and get things done. Sometimes that's when I can be the most creative myself. I don't have all the distractions, you know, necessarily. So I find that I work when I want to now versus when I have to. Yeah. And that to me is power. Like that has been such a freeing feeling, and it has allowed me to really just, like you say, stay in that state of mind that I want to be in.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Awesome. Yeah. All right. So 12 and 13, 12 is places we go when we feel wronged, and 13 is places we go to self-assess. And I think, you know, 12 talks about, hate and contempt and dehumanization. And there's some really disgust, there's some major emotions in there. And I think that a lot of that is happening in our world. But I think just like we talked about earlier, yes, and we need to constantly be in tune with who we are, living in our own integrity, recognizing the pride, the hubris, the humility, the things that, you know, she talks about how we say, how we show up in the world that has a lot of those very negative emotions going on, and how we can, in our own way, constantly self-assess and bring ourselves forward in a way that says, I'm showing up. I'm still going to show up.
Right. Yeah. You know, one point I just wanted to make about that, because I thought this was really interesting, because we tend to, so pride versus hubris, and we tend to, pride is like just feeling good about something you've accomplished, right? Where hubris is having almost an inflated sense of what you've accomplished. And, you know, pride is oftentimes like considered a bad word, like you're too prideful, your pride's getting in the way. I think it's important to have some pride, right, in what you do.
And take pride, right?
When take pride, yeah.
Taking pride, that is
absolutely. And so I think that that is something that I love that she made that distinction, because I do think hubris is more dangerous than pride, but we don't talk about it in that way.
Right.
And so I love that she pointed that out. And that's one of the things I love about this book too, is these are all different emotions that we go through. And it's almost like we have a misunderstanding of some of these things. And so you hear a lot of negativity about pride, but I don't necessarily hear a lot of negativity about hubris. And that is one of the things that, that actually hubris can get you in a lot more trouble than pride can. So
Yeah. And then same with humility in a little different way. But I think a lot of people, when they think of somebody as humble, they think of the quiet person in the back that just does all the work and doesn't say anything and just kind of keeps in the fringes. But that's not it. There's more to humility. Humility is when you recognize all the goodness that's out there, you recognize your strengths and your capabilities, and at the same time, you remain open to things that you can learn and to the fact that things are changing all the time. So it's actually a very active word. It's an active emotion to feel humility, because you're constantly assessing and taking things in. Mm-hmm. And what they said, you know, a little pride is good, a little hubris is dangerous, but humility is really what creates healthy relationships and real connection. Right. So, and it's that, you know, she says, I'm here to get it or to get it right, not be right. And that's what humility is. Imagine if we all showed up every day. All right. I want to get this right. I'm here to get this right. Tell me more, rather than I'm here to tell you. Right. Totally different energy, you know?
That's so true. So it's interesting, as we, you know, have dissected this book, you go back through and you realize like it absolutely 100% is true. The better we understand ourselves and emotions, the better we're going to understand others, which will create deeper connection and engagement amongst people. And we talk a lot about, especially in this country, like needing to unify. There's a lot of, you know, division and trying to, you know, as you talked about earlier, it's like, there's a lot of misunderstanding that's causing that division. And so this is a great opportunity to kind of take this book, create a higher level of understanding and even deepen those connections. And I think that's so important. I wish there was a way we could get this book out to everyone.
Yeah.
You know, well, have everyone spend time doing the work.
Yeah. And I agree with what Glennon said. This is a family Bible. This should be a person's Bible. This should be required reading.
It should be, for sure.
You want your stimulus check? Here's required reading.
But I mean,
a quiz.
Exactly. And then Brené goes into a whole section around meaningful connections, right? And I think that really sums it up. Like, here's how you cultivate those meaningful connections. And it's such a great way, in my opinion, to end the book, because it just brings it all full circle about what we're trying to accomplish ultimately anyway.
Yeah. And I love that she says it's daring and it's vulnerable to create meaningful connections, because it takes courage and it takes bold moves, you know, being willing to show up for yourself and for others. And, you know, she says it's grounded confidence, courage to walk alongside others, and story stewardship. And I love all of those things. I think they're all essential. And she also talks in this last chapter about your body and how she said, you know, the best indicator light for what's going on is your body. And I talk a lot about this in my practice. You know, our body is fascinatingly wise. Our mind is wise. So if you take your brain, we process 40 bits per second of information. 40 bits per second happens, and our brain is super fast, amazingly capable, right?
Right. But
that's 40 bits per second. Our body, science proves that our body processes at 11 million bits per second. Our body is so much wiser than our mind, which turns culture upside down. Everybody thinks we should think it through. We should figure it out. You know,
right.
put this to the grindstone and make it happen. No. But if we listen to our body, just like maybe Sandy, when you were in that job in those 5 years, you might've known it wasn't for you. Who knows? Your body could have been telling you. You never know. My body.
Trust me. My body was telling me. Yeah. Trust me when I say
our
that.
My body knows.
Back and spasms, headaches, everything. My body knew.
Things.
My body knew.
Yeah. My last job, you know, prior to this, it was day two and I was like, what? Something's happening here. And I knew it took me months and months and months to put my mind and body together. But that, the concept of letting our bodies be teachers, letting our bodies be messengers, mm-hmm. and call attention to our integrity, our truth. Are we braving, and being honest, and can we trust ourselves? That all comes from within our body. And I think when we do that and we live in that integrity, we're then able to do that with other people and allow them the space to do that. You know, I think that is such a beautiful thing that she brings up. And I could not end this call without talking about it, because I believe in that the body and its capability to help us immensely.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you know, you hear the phrase all the time, listen to your body, listen to your body. You need to listen to your body. Your body is telling you so much about what's going on in your head, your mind. Like it is truly 100% all connected. Yeah. Absolutely. Huh. So, you know, one thing she also mentions, well, you talked about this, you said the courage it takes to develop meaningful connections. And if you think about it, like I had a neighbor one time who moved into our neighborhood a few houses down from us. And so I'll give you an example. I had a friend of mine lived down the street, five houses down. Right. And I had lived there for a while. She moved in a couple of years after I did. And I didn't know who she was. She didn't know who I was. But then we had children at the same time. So we both had children, right? Boys, my son Jack and her son. And so, you know, you'd see, you know, then you'd kind of see people walking, like pushing the stroller down the street, things like that. And then, so you start to get to know them. And then I had twins, and then she had twins a few years later, but didn't really know each other yet, five houses away. Right. I mean, so it's so crazy if you think about it, like all it would have taken is a little courage to go out and, you know, like connect, but we ended up connecting when our boys became really good friends in school. And then now we have this great relationship and we're like, how did we live this close to each other for so long and not have that connection? But I had another neighbor move into the neighborhood, and he was a single male. He moved into the neighborhood. And so he got pies and brought them around to all the neighbors, knocked on the door and delivered a pie. And I was like, this is so amazing. Like, when's the last time someone did that? I had lived in that neighborhood almost 20 years at that point. And that's the first time anyone ever knocked on my door and said, I'm new in the neighborhood, right? I should have been over at his house saying, I know you're new in the neighborhood. Yeah. But he came to me because he realized that's the way he was going to connect with people. But I thought, what courage it takes to move into a whole new area, a whole new neighborhood, and then just go out and hand pies out to people and just introduce yourself. And you immediately establish a connection.
Yeah.
You know, and if you think about it, it doesn't take that much effort, but why didn't I go knock on his door first? I saw the moving trucks there, like, you know, or my friend down the street, like, why didn't I go seek her out? I knew she was there. I remember when they moved in, like, why didn't I do that then? You know, it does take her. And I think it takes courage. And I think part of it's just your fear, like, oh, those people don't want me bothering them. Those people don't want me knocking on their door, which is so ridiculous when you think about it.
Well, and
I just thought that was so funny.
Think about it as a metaphor. How can we show up with pie? You know,
right.
and And the flip side, oh, if I say something, they're not going to want to hear it. Or if I bring this forward, people may think something about me, right? So we hold tight. Yes. You know, that's what we do in conversations and relationships in the world. When we're more open and we show up authentically with pie, whatever it is, you know, we're just, this is me. Teach me, help me get it right. You know, help me. I think if we could do more of that, I think again, it would be, you know, it would open up doors. It would create, it would bring those walls down. It's like in, I talked about in the high schools, in the junior highs, you know, we just allow it in our world. Show up with pie there. That's our moral.
Exactly. Exactly. That's it. And I do think it, that's a great way to end this. This whole series, I think, has been so powerful and so much fun. And I love that Brené has spent the time and energy and her whole team to do this research and bring this to light for us. Because if people use this book the way it's intended, it will definitely make a difference in how we all connect and engage with one another.
So. Absolutely. And I love that, you know, she closes with a couple things that are so important. And the one that she talks about with her mom, that her mom taught her this: don't look away, don't look down, don't pretend not to see hurt. Look people in the eye, even when the pain is overwhelming. And when you're hurting and in pain, find the people who can look you in the eye.
Yes, I read that part and it really resonated with me. And I'm thinking, like, that is so true. And it again, all that is connecting, right? Meaning, like intentionally connecting with someone. That's so interesting. Yeah. So this has been quite a journey, this book, huh? I feel like it's one of those things where it's, you almost feel like when you finish the book, you feel a little freer because you've learned a little more about yourself along the way, right? So it's, that to me has been a lot of fun in going through this. So Beth, I've thoroughly enjoyed this whole series with you, and we need to do more stuff like this. So we have to figure out what book we'll do next. What book are we going to dissect next?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fun. So thank you for joining us and bringing all your amazing insights. I think, you know, just as your work as a life coach, you have such a gift. I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing. I feel like you're exactly where you're supposed to be. And maybe that's a little selfish of me because you've helped me so much, but I really do believe that you have this special gift in what you do. So thank you for sharing that with us here on this series.
Yeah, of course. And as you've heard my stories along the way, I'm figuring it out too. We're all figuring it out. And, you know, even if we don't know where we're going, just keep trying, keep plugging away. You know, the map is sometimes confusing, as Brené talks about early in the book. And I think, you know, we get help from coaches, we get help from friends. We pause a bit enough to hear our internal conversation and listen to our body compass. And I think when we do that, we get information and we just keep going. So, you know, we're all on the journey together. It's been so fun and I appreciate it. You know, Sandy, thanks for your time and, love being a part of your community.
Yeah. So I love that. So we're going to show up, like figure out how we can show up with pie, right?
Yes. Show up with pie.
I love that. I love that. That's going to be a sticky on my desk now.
Yeah.
All right, Beth, I appreciate it. And thank you again. For those of you out there, thank you for joining us on this series. You've been listening to the Her Journey Told podcast powered by Pivotal Moments Media. Thanks and have a good day. You've been listening to the Her Journey Told podcast, powered by Pivotal Moments. For more inspirational content, go to pivotalmoments.org. I'm Sandy Lutton. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure to keep an eye out for more episodes where podcasts can be heard. See you next time.